Welcome to the FemNation podcast, where we wholeheartedly believe women entrepreneurs can rise together. Success comes in many flavors. There are no secret strategies. Women entrepreneurs are rewriting history by defining success on their own terms. Hi, I'm White of Gannon, the down-to-earth chick with a different name. Entrepreneur and founder of the Female Entrepreneur Movement, our business is dedicated to helping women start and grow their businesses, increasing financial independence. Each week, join me for inspiring stories and powerful interviews of women entrepreneurs sharing their lessons to success to help you take your business to the next level. Now, let's go for it. Welcome to the FemNation podcast. Today, I have a treat to bring to you. I am interviewing Jessica Lorimer. She is a sales coach and has been in business for 5 years, helping over 3,000 entrepreneurs. No small feat by any means. But thank you for coming on today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell me, as we always start this podcast, how did your entrepreneurial journey get moving?
I fell into being an entrepreneur. I'm one of those people who thought I was going to be in business forever. I was working for corporate consultancies, and I was getting to do some really cool things. I was traveling the world, setting up new sales divisions for luxury fashion brands, and it was really cool. And after I'd done that for about 5 or 6 years, I burnt out, like most people do in sales, in the corporate world. I was diagnosed with ME, which is a chronic immune condition. And I went to my boss and I explained that I could have two options. I could either work part-time and I could help the companies I was working for, but on a part-time basis, or I had to leave. And he said, well, we can't take people part-time. So good luck. And so I handed in my 3 months notice there and then and set up my business on the side. I saw some Facebook ads one day for some people who used to work in sales. They'd become online business owners. They were doing various things. And I thought, well, looks easy. I can probably do that. I've got some skills. I can teach people to sell stuff. And I fell into the online business space. And that's how I started in 2014.
So how did you know what you wanted to offer or, you know, what problem you wanted to solve?
I'm basically talentless apart from being able to sell. And one of the biggest things that I was responsible for in my corporate job was ultimately helping other salespeople really expand their sales skills, learn new techniques, understand the importance of relationship building in sales, and not be hard sellers in traditionally male-dominated or tough industries. And so when I came online, I saw there were tons and tons of qualified business owners who were really good at things like health and well-being and mindset and marketing, but they weren't great at selling themselves or their products or their services. And so for me, there was this natural need to be able to show business owners that actually selling isn't as sleazy and difficult as it looks, but also matched my skill set that I'd been working on for, you know, the last sort of 9 years that I'd been in business. Right.
So then how did the journey transform from there to creating what you offer to your clients?
So it wasn't really any different than what I'd been doing in corporate. It was just instead of selling my services to corporations, I was working with solopreneurs. So I was working with people who were just starting out and who were learning like the foundational sales skills. So it took me really back to the beginning of my sales training days and helping people with the basics, understanding like the basics of relationship building and how to use sales psychology to communicate with their audience better, how to improve their messaging, how to get really clear and create compelling offers. Those things weren't any different. And for me, in all honesty, creating the offers was the easy bit. It was actually defining who I wanted to work with that was harder.
What was the most vulnerable struggle you overcame as an entrepreneur?
I think, as with anybody who leaves the corporate world, it's actually really hard to get your personality back. And I don't think that it's necessarily difficult in terms of practicality to do. You know, it's not difficult to have a personality. And obviously, outside of a corporate office, you're probably quite a nice person and you know, interact like a normal human. But when you move from having a corporate job where you are taught how to be and taught how to act and taught how to react in every situation and be diplomatic and polite and not have to deal with trolls generally. Mm-hmm. It's really, really hard. And it's quite difficult to expose who you are as a person in order to build that personal brand online as a business owner and actually have people come back to you and say things like, I hate your personality. You know, that's really difficult. And that was something that I found really challenging and that I see a lot of people who've come from corporate find really challenging.
And so they struggle with that as well.
Yeah, because you're in a corporate job, you're bred to be vanilla.
Sure.
You aren't there to kind of rock the boat. You're there to operate the way that a company wants you to. And ultimately, you represent them, whether that's in emails or phone calls or externally of the organization at presentations. And so you're taught to behave a certain way and to think a certain way. And actually going from that to being responsible for your own business and having to think independently, having to solve situations on your own, and actually having to put your own personality and stamp on things, that's really hard because you open yourself up then to rejection, not necessarily because of the company that you work for, the product services you're selling, actually because of who you are as a person. Some people just do not like you as a person. And that I think is quite difficult when you don't have a brand there that you can kind of go, oh, well, it's okay. They don't hate me. They hate company X. And that's fine. You actually start looking at your own self-worth in some cases and who you are as a person and why people would feel that need to react negatively to you.
In working with 3,000 or over 3,000, it's an amazing number. But in working with that many entrepreneurs, do you find that there's a possibility that even coming from cultural conditioning or societal conditioning also lends to the issue that you felt like, you know, you had to create a brand around yourself because you're not meant to be vanilla anymore? And I mean, I definitely see that in corporate, yeah. But that's like in front of us. But I think a lot of people struggle with that on the other side too.
Yeah, I think they do. And I think some people almost go the other way. And we've seen kind of waves over the last 5 years that I've been in the online space, certainly, where, you know, when I started out, the trend was to have photo shoots in Paris next to the Eiffel Tower, and everyone was very pretty and pastel and yay, like everything is fine and fairy dust and light. And then, you know, we've moved through certain trends and we're at that stage now where everyone wants to be a rebel and they're dropping F-bombs. And unless you swear, then you're not like out there and mm-hmm. cool and rah-rah. And I think it's quite challenging because ultimately people follow what they think is working. And so cultural conditioning forms a huge part of who we are as a society. You know, we can't get away from that. And ultimately it's really sad because what we end up seeing is a load of entrepreneurs who follow the trends and then they don't have the success that they want because they're not actually being who they are and they're not selling the right products or services that align with their genuine expertise because they're becoming what they think the market wants them to be rather than actually showing up as who they are and who they can actually serve.
Absolutely. What is your definition of success as an entrepreneur?
It's interesting and people keep asking me this. It's one of those weird things where people always ask you what it means to you to be successful. And I think for me, I don't know that I will ever get to a point where I say I am successful now because I'm quite a type A personality. So for me, the actual enjoyment of running my own business and kind of doing what I do is the fact that there will always be something that can stretch me and challenge me and push me outside of a new comfort zone so that I can learn more. So perhaps my idea of success is always being challenged. I'm not sure.
I actually resonate with that.
I'm glad because I was like, I could give some stock answer around maybe like one day I'll be famous, but I don't really want those things.
Right. But it's almost like, yeah, it's almost like you have a challenge in front of you. And then when you work on it, it's the challenge itself that's successful. So then when you master it, you're just like, sweet. It could be 7 figures a year bringing in. I'd be bored out of my yeah. mind. Because I'm like, I need that challenge. I need that push. I need that drive. Because in that drive, I feel successful.
And that's the thing. And I think, you know, there are lots of people who perhaps will say, you've got to celebrate when you get there. And I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I agree, mm-hmm. like, absolutely, you know, buy a bottle of Prosecco, do your thing. But at the same time, I think we also have to recognize that some people are driven by the adrenaline and the challenge and the brain stretching, as opposed to hitting a certain revenue level or being able to work a certain amount of hours a week.
Right. Or having some particular lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. Like, success is as you define it. You know, there'll be people who listen to this and go, oh God, Jess, like, that's so pretentious. You know, who really cares? Like, it's easy for you to say you earn decent money. You've got a bunch of clients. Like, sure, you like the challenge. You know, look, I fully realize how pretentious that sounds. But at the same time, you know, perhaps 5 years ago, I would have defined success differently. And I think that's the important thing to recognize, is that when we're on a different stage of the journey, success will look different. Yes. You know, what success looks like to me now is not how I looked at it 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I wanted to make £1,500 a month because then I could pay my mortgage and I could pay my bills and just sit at home all day in my pajamas. And that was great. And as time's gone on, I've wanted to, you know, write a book and speak at events and have a podcast. And those things, you know, contributed to what success looked like for me. But again, you know, if I kind of look at the common theme, it's not the thing or the achievable that matters. It's being able to stretch. It's being able to do something different.
And grow. I think,
yeah,
a constant evolution. The underlying premise of that in the interviews I've done and the ones that I've asked that question on have been not monetary. You know, I mean, it is definitely very common that there was something that the women I've interviewed, you know, I have not interviewed men. So in the women I've interviewed, that is an underlying piece, that there is purpose driven, or, you know, seeing something change, or, you know, whatever those things look like, that is a common answer.
Well, psychologically, women work very differently. You know, you've got to remember,
they do.
Like, right brain, left brain, all that kind of stuff. Women are driven by emotion and men are driven generally by logic. So, you know, all the people listening are now going to be incredibly offended, because of course there will be somebody who goes, but that's not me. And that's cool. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, women are programmed differently because we are motivated by different things. That's part of what society teaches us. It's part of what we learn. And it's also part of the way that our psychology works. And men typically are more goal-oriented. So when you do talk to, you know, I have both male and female clients. And the interesting thing for me about my male clients is that they do not suffer as much or as often from the mindset issues that my female clients do, because they're not tied into that emotion necessarily as often or as strongly. So in fact, like, they're goal oriented and they will go for the goal. And sometimes that will be the thing that actually restricts them, because they're not tying into that emotional piece. They'll forget about the relationship building sometimes. And sometimes it becomes, they've got such a tunnel vision on the goal that they forget about all the other little pieces that go into it. Whereas the female clients I work with, a lot of the time they will suffer much more from, you know, confidence issues or comparisonitis. And that will really tie into what they're fears are around, particularly around selling. But ultimately, once they actually get over those things and move past them, they tend to be more successful, like, in a shorter period of time, because they are focused on the goal, but they're pulling in the actual skills, the soft skills needed to be more successful in a quicker way.
And that makes complete sense. And I mean, there's a dynamic that the two working together, men and women, that could actually, even in a business setting, could be extremely powerful.
100%.
Because you can work both sides of that and come to that with both sides of the table. But it's a collective, you know, bringing it in a little bit this way and bringing it in a little bit this way. It's not one's better than the other. And I reiterate that often on this podcast. It's not that I interview women entrepreneurs because they're better entrepreneurs. I'm interviewing women entrepreneurs because there's still a lot that needs to be said, that with women coming into the workforce and then coming into entrepreneurship, it's still fresh. Yeah. As far as what we've known from the culture of, you know, male driven business world, You know, so I mean, there's much more that we know about that, less that we know about this. So what do the women do? You know, where do we think? But it's neat your perspective to be able to look at it analytically and see that men have to remember this piece, women have to, you know, women have this piece, but they, you know, both in their own right end up stepping in their own way, but that's human. You know, we're going to, we are our own worst critic. We're our own worst, you know, roadblock. So.
And that's it. You know, there's actually a fantastic report for anyone who is interested in like the psychological sales perspective. There's a great report from Korn Ferry that they did maybe 2 years ago now that basically talks about, you know, why there should be an even workforce. And it talks about the soft skills that women bring to the dynamic. And it talks about the elements that men bring to that dynamic as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be fascinating. I geek out on stuff like that. It's pretty
I just kind of sat there on Sunday like, oh, this is cool.
Might have to pick your brain for that link later on. Let me ask you this. You wrote a book.
I did.
And how has that journey of writing a book paralleled your entrepreneurial journey?
Do you know what? I wouldn't say it has. Writing a book was much easier than building a business.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to throw it out there for anyone who wants to write a book. Yeah. The book writing from my perspective was not that hard. Because ultimately, writing a book is distilling the information that you already know and putting it into a medium that other people can learn from. And that's it. Like you know, when I wrote my book, the planning was the hardest bit, knowing what I wanted to include and what that meant I would have to leave out. That was, you know, difficult because obviously when you write a book, you kind of want it to be this million page opus where you share everything so that you never have to write anything else ever again. And that's obviously not possible because, you know, even Tolstoy kind of War and Peace, not necessarily the most complete read book ever. But entrepreneurial journey, yes, there are some similarities, I guess. You have highs and lows. You don't necessarily want to get up every day and write your book, but you have to if you want to finish it. And you don't necessarily want to get up and work in your business every day, but you have to unless you want, you know, it to not work out. However, I would say that the journey probably is different in that it's much easier to write a book. It's much simpler to do. The journey has probably more parallels after the book is actually published. And I think that's probably because then you're putting something out there into the world that can be critiqued, that can be picked up by anybody, and that you feel naturally relatively protective of, because that's your thoughts and your theories and your perspective. And you're putting it out on platforms, which mean that anybody can buy it, even if it's not right for them. You know, there's no way of really saying to somebody other than writing in the blurb, do not buy this if your name is Susan Jones or whatever. there's no real way of telling the wrong people not to buy your book. And, you know, what tends to happen is that you'll get people who do buy your book who were not really the ideal reader for it. And they'll say, oh, well, that book was terrible. Mm. And it's not the book was terrible. It's that they weren't necessarily the ideal client for that book. They weren't necessarily the ideal reader or whatever. And as an author, you are much more removed from being able to respond to that. But it hurts just as much as when somebody kind of says, oh, yeah, well, you know, your dress today was crap. Or I watched a live stream of yours and I thought it was all naff. So, you know, it didn't hurt any less. Sure. You will still get people who say it sucks. And to a certain degree, I mean, I'm very guilty of not looking at my Amazon reviews because I'm the sort of person that responds to every single one. I'm that author. And somebody once wrote on my Amazon review for my book, she gave me a 3-star review. You can go and find it. Everyone who's listening is now going to be like, what's that review? But she basically wrote, I used some stuff in the book and it worked, but I didn't like the grammar. And I was like, and I remember writing that. She was like, and I, even though at the beginning of the book, Jess says that there might be some grammatical errors because it's a book, like there's always going to be something.
Yeah. Yep.
Bear in mind, we had an editor go through it. She's like, it could have benefited with an editor because it was just full of them. None of the other reviews talk about anything to do with typos or grammar, or they talk about the content and it being useful. But whenever anyone asks about my book, it's that one that I remember, because I'm like, A, it's really funny, and B, it's negative, and our brains are more programmed to pick up the negative. Yeah. And I think that's the same as the entrepreneurial journey. It doesn't matter how many people, you know, like I say, we've helped successfully over 3,000 entrepreneurs in the last 5 years. There have been a handful of people that I've fired as clients, or, you know, that I've turned down on discovery calls and said, you know what, we're not a good fit. I will always remember those first, because that is how it is. As a human being, we're naturally more self-critical. And I think those are probably the biggest parallels that I would draw.
Interesting. You're very grounded on how you speak about, you know, the journey of the book and your entrepreneurial journey. How did you learn to get out of your own way?
I think I've always been relatively pragmatic. I would credit that to having two parents who were in the army. So our household was always very black and white. And sales is not an industry where you get much time to be anything but practical. You're looking always at percentages and what's the best possible outcome from a situation. And I think that really helps. I think sometimes, though, it's interesting because it takes you out of your own way. It makes you quite objective about opportunities, but actually sometimes it can make you almost too analytical. You can be too far removed from something and it can feel almost like you don't care, like you're detached, and you're not. It's just that you're weighing up the outcomes and you're looking at how can I possibly achieve the best possible outcome in a certain situation, which, you know, doesn't always come across well to perhaps other people who are involved in that process. Mm-hmm.
What is one tip that you would give to entrepreneurs to step out of their own way in the sales side, aside from working with you?
No, I think, you know, it's a very specific kind of person that wants to work with me anyway. Unless you've got a dark sense of humor, love of wine, like we probably won't get along. You know, I think it's always interesting. There is not one way to do sales correctly. And anyone that tells you that there is lying completely, because as a salesperson or someone who's trying to teach you something, they're completely biased. If you want to get out of your own way when it comes to selling, ultimately the most important thing is that you just do it. Do something. And I think you have to accept that you don't have to like it. There are plenty of things that we do every single day in life that we don't necessarily like, but that we suck up and go, well, I'm going to do this because it will take us to this result. And for the majority of people, when they start out the selling, it's one of those things. You just have to suck it up. If you want your business to survive, if you want it to thrive, if you want it to be profitable, in the beginning, you might hate sales. But if you don't do it, your business will die. So at that moment in time in your journey, you have to suck it up and you just have to do one sales activity every day. And then as time goes on and you start to see the results of that, you know, as your business starts to grow and you help more customers and you make more money and you're able to use that money to, you know, change the world in the way that you want to, actually you start to recognize sales as being quite a valuable tool. So at that point it goes from suck it up and just do it to, oh, actually this one activity every day helps me achieve all of these things. So you start to feel differently about it. The advice doesn't change, but you just feel differently.
Sure. You evolve.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of your own thinking, it's not, you know, it doesn't change in terms of what you practically do. It's just that you feel different about it.
How has your entrepreneurial or book creating journey changed you?
I would say that I'm a lot more tolerant now, and I've developed a patience I probably didn't have before. When I was working in corporate, people used to call me the ice queen. They would send their new employees to my desk and expect me to terrify them within the first 5 minutes and just see whether the person had, you know, any kind of metal would stick around. I'm not sure that that's the best sales pitch for myself as a human being, but I would like to say that over the last 5 years, I have changed and apparently I'm now a little bit warmer. Who knows? But I think it's interesting because I have become more tolerant, but there's a really great quote from Daniel Laporte who says, we are overly tolerant because that's what we believe compassion is. And I think that it's interesting for me because when I came into the online world, I almost did like a 360. I went from being, you know, ice queen down the line, very little patience, very little tolerance to, oh my goodness, I have to be super, super nice to people. Otherwise, they're not going to buy anything from me. And they have to think that I'm super, super friendly and lovely all of the time and really accessible. And that's not really who I am as a person. I don't even like people all that much. I sit at events, I speak out all the time. I'm quite introverted and, you know, I'm not necessarily a person who wants to be surrounded by hundreds of people or can necessarily cope with that. But I think it's important to find the balance, like, you know, and that's important in everything. Like, however you change, some people might be a bit more fierce on starting their business or a bit more assertive, but it's about finding that balance of what works for you.
What about the perception of sales through vulnerability that we see so much of online now?
Well, you know, I have two relatively strong thoughts on it. One is you should never pimp your pain for profit. There is a very big difference between being who you are and therefore being vulnerable as a person because you are demonstrating your personality and you're putting that into a personal brand and you're using that to sell on the internet and saying, oh, you know, 2 years ago I lived under a bridge and I was, you know, having this really terrible time in life. And then I found a $5,000 bill and everything was fine again because I invested in one business coach and suddenly I'm ultimately like those people kind of make me sick. So pimping your pain for profit is not okay. And actually, I don't believe that you should ever expose your audience to raw trauma. I think that's very wrong. It puts your audience in a position where actually they feel uncomfortable and it puts them in a kind of an adrenaline-inducing state that they can't cope with. You know, they don't know what to say. They don't know how to fix your problem. So if you're going out there and you're always saying, oh, I'm having such a terrible day, buy my thing, or, you know, oh, here's this really raw, painful event that happened in my life and buy my thing, your audience won't last long. You churn through them because you drain their energy. If you show up as a normal human being and you show them that there are highs and lows to what they might be looking to achieve, and you give them the reality of that situation, and you can show them, most importantly, the learning outcomes from experiencing something that's potentially negative. So rather than delving into the raw pain of a situation, but looking at something happened to me and this is what I learned from it, and this is how those skills could benefit you, and selling from that perspective, that's fine. You know, that gives your audience something they actually need that's going to be beneficial, and it builds that relationship in a way that doesn't build fear or resentment or concern, as opposed to, you know, just throwing whatever awful event has happened to you on the internet and hoping that somebody's going to buy something very expensive from you as a result.
Right. Wise words, because you see a lot of, I see a lot of that, you know, out there. And I shut a lot of it down too, and don't look, because otherwise it's an emotional drain to be like, wow, okay. So I want to work with that person now. It's just be like, wait, I really like them, but now I don't know. You know, I mean, yes, I still like them, but they're going through stuff, or, you know, I mean, there's just so many conflicting emotions on that.
And that's the thing. I mean, you've got to remember that ultimately when you're providing a service in it, and this is a big online argument, you know, do you be professional? I think there's a very big difference between being professional and always demonstrating that you can deliver to your audience in the capacity for which they're hiring you, and going out there and trying to cause as much drama as possible to get as many eyes on your stuff, because that's just spray and pray marketing. That's not an actual strategy for marketing or sales. But sharing learning outcomes, you know, and being aware that people want to see, or people want to buy from people they trust. Inevitably, the people we trust are people who are flawed. You know, they're the people who show us the reality. Those are the more credible people, not the ones who just show us pain all the time.
Where do you feel that balance lies in the strategic, powerful vulnerability versus
I think you should
ignorance?
I think you should never talk about an event as it's happening. At that moment, you're not ever objective enough to share learning outcomes from it because you're still in it. There's no defined time period on it. It might be 3 months, it might be 3 weeks, it might be 6 months or a year later that you say, okay, something happened in my business or in my life and it caused me to want to make this change. And here's what I learned. And you do that when you're ready to, when it's not raw for you anymore, And when you're ready to be objective about it and use it as a piece of content that somebody comments and says, oh my goodness, like, I would never have made that mistake, or how ridiculous are you, that you're not going to get upset and antagonistic about it because you're still feeling like you're in the turmoil. I think that's a pretty important distinction to make. And I also think that there's a balance between sharing for the benefit of your audience. What can they learn from this? What mistakes can they avoid making as a result of me sharing? What potential results can they get as a result of me being open about an experience I've had, versus is this self-gratifying? Is this me using Facebook as a journal for the world? And I think if you can't answer one of those questions around what your audience will actually gain from it and have something that is positive, you shouldn't post it. You know, get a journal, write in it privately, do your thing, burn it under the moon, whatever you need to do. But it needs to be ultimately always focused on what is my audience going to get from this? And is there a real purpose to me sharing this, as opposed to this is me venting and effectively manipulating people's emotions to do something that I want them to do?
And that's, I mean, that could be a serious crime, you know, with quotes, you know, I mean, that's serious. You're messing with people's emotions in order to gain an outcome. And that's where you're going to lose your clients too, is because they will eventually see that. Well, you can't not.
You churn through an audience very quickly. And also, you know, we see a lot of this at the moment. Everyone's selling, making money online. I wrote a post about it literally this morning because I've just come back from my birthday and I scrolled through the newsfeed and there are like 10,000 people out there who all used to be great at health coaching or marketing or, you know, fantastic web designers. And someone somewhere has told them, or they've looked for themselves around the internet, the people they're following, they've gone, all the people who are making money are the ones who are selling, making money. I'm just going to go and sell that. And they're not qualified. They don't know how to do it. They don't know why it would work. They, you know, are playing with people's businesses and livelihoods. And that for me is very, very wrong. And they're doing it, building up these personal brands that they say are vulnerable and authentic, and in fact are just manipulative and designed to get people to buy things that don't actually work.
What would be a good way to, you know, for a listener to put on a lens to see that, if this is like something like, you know, I felt this, but now this is definitely, I was rightly feeling this. How do you train yourself to have a lens to kind of see that a little bit?
To some degree, you can't always. Like, I would say that I'm a good reader of people. And I've been burnt in this industry. Everyone does. So to some degree, if you have been burnt or you haven't yet, expect to be, because at some point you will be. And it's unfortunate, but you've got to do your due diligence in the first place. You know, be sure that you look at people's testimonials. Do they actually change regularly? Or have they had the same testimonials since 2015? And if they have, then why none of their other clients saying good things about them? Or why are they not updating those?
Right.
Talk to that person. And actually ask them, you know, what makes you experienced enough or qualified enough to help me achieve this? How many of your other clients have done that? You know, where have you taken people from and to? And I think if a coach says, oh, I wouldn't be happy for you to contact anybody about working with me, that's a big red flag. You know, ultimately, I always say to people, look, you know, my clients are busy people, but I can absolutely email intro you. And, you know, if they can make it happen, they will. If not, like, we'll find you somebody else. And a reputable person should be okay with you talking to their current clients if they can make that happen. Now, don't be unreasonable and be like, oh, I need to talk to 10 of your clients, because, you know, that just makes you a pain in the ass and no coach is going to take you on if you ask for that. But looking at testimonials, you know, looking at recent testimonials, making sure that there are people reflected in those testimonials who've done what you want to do or who've gone where you want to go. That's important. But also, you know, be honest with yourself. Don't expect miracles. A lot of people come to me and they go, Jess, I want to make 6 figures in 2 weeks. Great. Have you made your first sale yet? No. Okay. Well, that's not going to happen. So be clear. Like, when you're on a discovery call with anybody, you're asking them questions, make sure that there are red flag questions for you. How quickly are they promising that you can get these results? Do they actually know anything about your business or your health or your relationship or whatever it is that they're trying to help you with? You know, have they asked you those questions first before they've promised you a miracle result that you can pay $10,000 for? You know, and if they haven't, then be very clear that that person's trying to sell you an outcome that may not be possible for you, you know, in the time frame that they're talking about.
Right. Well, that's kind of, I mean, you're truth bombing all over this thing.
Yeah. Again, polarizing.
No, but that's what I want it to be. I mean, I've got it all over the spectrum from interviews, but it's these kinds of interviews that are very honest about being an entrepreneur. I'm not going to come in here and sugarcoat it. I don't want to sugarcoat it. If someone wants to come in and talk about their journey and really wants to stay surface on it, that's good too, because that's where they are. But at the same time, we also need to hear those real, raw, serious answers that this is reality, guys, you know, and I am grateful that you're sharing those and dishing them.
Well, I'm glad. But I think it is true, you know, and I think the biggest piece of advice I would say to everybody is not everyone is cut out to be an entrepreneur, and that is okay. And I think that applies both ways. Sometimes people realize when they get into business, they're like, oh, do you know what? This isn't for me. I don't necessarily want the responsibility of running business and hiring a team and having to deliver and doing all the things. And for other people, particularly people who are working with other business owners, you have to understand that not every business owner will be successful. Not every business owner is cut out to be a successful business owner. And so sometimes you have to take a step back in that objective perspective and go, well, I can't help everybody. You know, sometimes it doesn't matter what you do. A client is not going to do the work, or they won't see the result that they were expecting, or something will go wrong, or life will happen and get in the way. And if you're a good coach, you recognize when you genuinely have done 100% of your job and given your person the information and the implementation and the support that they need to get them there. And you recognize when you have met that, but they perhaps haven't held up their side of the deal, and you don't blame yourself for that. And other times you have to really look hard at yourself and go, am I actually showing up 100% here? And if I'm not, I need to change that pretty quick. But yeah, not everybody's cut out for this. You know, it's fine. Some people will dream about it all their life and never do it.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
There's nothing wrong with those people. It's just everybody likes a daydream. Personally, I prefer the one about the Bahamas, but like, you know, it's all good. We've all got a dream about something. Ryan Gosling, the Bahamas, cocktails. I'm there.
And I love that. Jess, I really, really appreciate you coming on this show today and just, you know, showing the real you, talking about, which I expected nothing less. But at the same time, thank you for just saying it like it is and putting it out there. Where can we find you, and give us a title of your book, and where can we find that?
No, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It's honestly been a pleasure. So you can find me. I've got my own podcast where I do this kind of thing all the time, and it's called the Smart Leader Sell Podcast. It's over on iTunes and pretty much every other place that we could put it on the internet. So search that and you'll be able to find me. And my book is called Smart Leader Sell, because I am not creative enough to name anything differently. So you can search for that on Amazon. It's there. And you can grab a copy. And if you find lots of grammatical mistakes, please leave a review on Amazon, because I would love that. Like,
and it'll that stick. Okay. But I mean, you know, think differently of the stars.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just put it as 5 stars and then write that it was crap. Still, that's right. We don't need to lose those points. Given how little Amazon pay for every single book is, like,
right. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to spend this time with you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
Guys, make sure you check out the show notes, because we're going to have links to how you can connect with Jess and read her wisdom and listen to her podcast, because there's going to be some, I'm sure, full of it. If this was just a glimpse, there's a ton of it over there. So thank you for listening to the FemNation podcast. And as always, keep moving forward. Thanks for listening to the FemNation podcast. Be sure to check out our show notes for more details from the episode. If you love the show, share it with a friend or drop me a note. I'd love to hear from you over at whitedovegannon.com, or find me on social media. Until next time, keep moving forward.